This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Thanks for being with us on the program today. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions, but unfortunately the show is pre-recorded this week, so we can't take them live on the program. You can always send them via email, though, for any of our four mayors to ask@WBAA.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good to see you.
Thank you, Stan. Good to be here.
And let's start out with some listener questions. We've had a few of them come in since you were last on the program.
Okay.
Andrew says, I've always wanted to ask about the southbound intersection of 18th and South Streets. It is impossible, he says, to turn left without running the light, making it very busy. It has a left turn lane, but no protected left arrow. Are there any plans to change this, he wants to know.
Yeah, not at the present time. I mean, I know that during rush hour periods and certain periods of the day, that can be a difficult intersection. Most of the time during the day, most of the 24-hour window, you can make turns there, but there are peak times when it's a little harder. We've always stopped short of putting protected time there because that takes, as we've talked when some of these similar questions, there's 60 seconds in a minute. So if you make a protected left for 15 seconds, you've got to take 15 seconds off some other cycle. And with the heavy traffic on South Street and 18th Street, and to be able to keep those cars flowing, not back them up into Five Points, not back up 18th to the south into Main Street, some things like that. We've just never made that decision to do that. You know, I'll continue to look at that, and maybe someday if the Five Points, when we look at all the Five Points and the development, new development take place.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because obviously you're relooking at that whole area.
Yeah, that
right
might
now
be the time to try to create some wider lanes, or to make some ability for people to take some other motions to help move traffic enough that we could take some time away. And we've talked about that would probably be the appropriate time to. Really, if we're going to make some adjustments or do some actual road projects, or we reconfigured that intersection, that would be the time to do it.
Well, and this strikes me as somewhat similar, although slightly less traffic, than what we talked about a couple of years ago when you were redoing the intersection of Sagamore and South Street, and you were talking to businesses on either side of South Street, asking them to help you with, like, right-of-way issues. There, you've got a convenience store, you've got a couple of businesses, you've got a fire station, you've got a couple of private homes as you back down 18th Street. So, I mean, there's a lot of people who you'd probably have to engage with to try to widen that street if you wanted to.
Yeah, the only corner we wouldn't have to buy any land would be this fire station side. And that in itself is a challenge, as you know, because of the steepness of that hill there. So, and the way that ground is. So that's not, at least on that side, that's not an easy intersection to reconfigure. But yes, we would definitely need to purchase land out off of all the surrounding landowners, at some level, to make that possible.
Andrew, thanks for your question. We appreciate it. We got this one in from James. He says, the housing analysis and study that was done earlier this year by MKSK and Green Street revealed that two very large house-seeking populations, those entering the workforce, i.e. young professionals, and those leaving the workforce, i.e. retirees, are looking for similar types of housing that are walkable to many places that breed a high quality of life, like shops, restaurants, etc. But the huge trend, he says, as is noted, veers toward the luxury-style apartments that cost well over $1,000 a month for even the most basic types of some living spaces. My question to you is this, he says, how are we incentivizing developers to put more cost-effective housing near downtown so that these two growing populations, young professionals and retirees, can afford it long-term?
Well, that was the purpose of the study, was to find out what type of trends that we had and what we were doing and what we needed to do, and to bring that to the attention of the developers and builders and begin that discussion on what does the market need, where is the market going. And so, we've put that information out there. We're going to continue to do that. I want to be honest, we're not incentivizing somebody to build a certain type of product. I don't think we're to that point where we're going to take tax dollars to pay a developer to build a certain type of home. We're hoping that by bringing that to people's attention, to show that there's a market there, to encourage that through other infrastructure things that we might do to make it more cost affordable or more appealing to somebody to do it in certain areas like we're doing with parks and trails. But, you know, we haven't got to the point where, you know, just in simple terms, if you build this type of home, the city's going to give you, you know, $10,000 to get you to do that.
There are things like tax incentives, I suppose, that get offered to developers, right?
Well, we don't typically offer any type of tax incentives for R1 residential property. Okay. And so then there's some state laws on what you can and can't do. And you can do certain things, but I think what we're trying to do is encourage that too. And by the way that we're doing some of our amenities, helping do work in some of our older neighborhoods to encourage some of that. But I'm not disputing what the caller said at all. It's a very good point, and it is something we're going to have to continue to work on and try to find that middle ground on how to make that happen. So everybody, we can hit those benchmarks in that report.
One of the things Mayor Dennis has said to us a number of times over the last couple of years, as he has talked about how the State Street project has developed and how people have wanted to invest along it, he has said a number of times that he kind of feels that market forces are just that they are a little bit out of his control, that developers will do their own research, they'll figure out what they think the market can bear, they will come to the city with a prospectus that says, here's what we want to do, here's what we think we can charge for rent when we build, in the case of West Lafayette, new high-rise buildings, things like that. I mean, you've got a few multi-story apartment buildings that have gone up in your downtown. Do you feel the same way? Do you think that the market is just the market and the city doesn't really affect that?
Well, I mean, there's some truth to that. Developers will do their own research and they'll look at what they think the market will bear. But I do think we have a role in helping, like we did with this actual study, to try to bring forth data that we believe is correct. And we had a good response to the study that there are needs like this, and we do want people looking at this, the development holistically, right? At what it takes to keep a community strong and to meet those housing needs. And that's why we work a lot with Habitat, you know, for Humanity. Some years, the city of Lafayette, through our home and CDGB funds, will give Habitat $300,000 to $350,000 to do several homes and work with lots and different things like that. But that's still not on a large enough scale, you know, to be the sole solution to this issue. And so I think we do have a role in keeping that information out there, encouraging people, and then working with developers if there is a way, whether it's lot sizes, different things like that, that might make it, you know, affordable in a way that they can come up with those products that meet those varying needs that you and the callers described.
I was thinking also about when we talk about downtown development, one of the things that we've talked a number of times about is, can we ever get a supermarket downtown? And of course, the more amenities you have, as James points out, the more attractive it becomes for people to live there. And the more attractive a thing is, the more you can typically charge for it. So I guess I got to ask at this point, we haven't talked about this in a while, any supermarket developers talking to you about anything downtown these days?
No, we still haven't been able to, you know, crack that egg. And I think as you know, we have a couple projects that we're working on right now that I think you'll see here be announced in the future for additional downtown living at various levels. And I think as we continue to create that density, as we've talked about, that possibility still exists. Fortunately for us, we have enough amenities downtown that we can attract people to live downtown without a grocery store right now. So that's not stopping us from getting people downtown, but would it help and would a lot of people enjoy it? Absolutely. But we still haven't cracked that density, their model yet to really get anybody interested.
So in other words, are you getting feedback from people who say, nah, we think we need a few more people in that neck of the woods before it makes economic sense for us to build?
Yeah, that's what we've always been told from the beginning, that there's density calculations and we're just not there.
Okay. Another question comes in from Patrick, who writes, what can be done about the disturbing mural adorning the exterior walls of the Spot Tavern? He says, large, colorful images display graphic sex, violence, and genitalia. Surely this violates city ordinances. It is extremely awkward, he says, for customers of Smitty Bread next door. I know this has come up before, and there were some sort of free speech concerns. Mm-hmm. And so what's the latest that you're hearing about this?
Well, actually, that's the first I've heard about that in several years, after we kind of went through the initial phase when the artwork paintings went up. You know, our city attorney researched it. There's quite a bit of precedent in case law that it does fall under free speech, and it's not against any city ordinance. It's not in my personal taste, but that's just me, right? So, I mean, people do have the right. It's private property. It's not on a public building. I understand that some people do not appreciate it or offended by it. Lots of people called in and said contacted me and said they were fine with it. But when it comes right down to it, it's not, you know, violating any law.
Okay. This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, and our program has been pre-recorded, so we can't take your phone calls today. Do always send your emails to ask@wbaa.org for any of our four mayors. Tweet those questions also at WBAA News on Twitter. You and I were talking the day before we taped this about a resolution that you're hoping to craft in the next couple of months, which will commit your city and hopefully its citizens, its businesses, to more climate change action, to put some goals in place. You said when you and I spoke that you didn't have any specific language or specific targets in mind, but that was before the initial city council meeting. I was curious what sort of feedback you got during the meeting and after that as people began to kind of mull it over.
Well, I mean, there were several people that showed up to the city council meeting to speak and just basically say thank you for, you know, taking this up, and they wanted to volunteer and help. And so I do think there is certainly some good enthusiasm out there. Iris O'Donnell spoke and kind of gave the council some ideas of what the process would look like, what a audit is, you know, a climate audit like West Lafayette did. It'll take quite a bit longer in Lafayette to do an audit of that nature. And so we really just kind of got that ball rolling, starting to get people, I guess, just in the back of their mind, and we appreciate you covering it, that we're going to do this, and to be kind of start to look for meeting dates and times in January and things like that. And then Iris is going to spend some time in December, first part of January, really educating the council members. You know, some of them know about climate change. I think we're going to get a very positive response, but really digging into it a little bit deeper and really understanding causes and different what's being done out there. And so we're going to spend some time doing that. Then we're going to start the public process of hearing what people's concerns are, what they think they can bring to the table, if they're willing to volunteer, different things like that. And then start that audit to see, you know, from a city side on our facilities and things, what we might be able to do, and then what might citizens might be able to do. Like I mentioned to you earlier, I really want to get everybody engaged, find out what people are doing. I think that's important to know too, and what they're planning and what we can do, but get kind of that. And I think it's got to start, right? Kind of that grassroots movement. You know, we can all do something, even if, you know, if I make changes, which we will, to the city building. You know, we're already talking about at Renew about cogeneration and putting in a solar field. That can help. But unless everybody kind of does something, you know what I mean? I think that's important if we really want to make an impact. And I think it's important from the educational level that the next generation see what we're doing, and that we help keep that discussion alive, right? That it's not kind of a one and done, or, you know, we kind of become of that mindset that this is something we want to do and continually look at it. One of the young ladies, and you had actually brought it up as opposed to me as a question on the interview the other day about green energy, potential jobs, or, you know, young people. And a couple of the people there brought that up, that, you know, they want to stay in this community but they want it to be a good community that's environmentally friendly and takes climate change seriously. And they feel that there are other people that will look at the community differently about moving here or moving jobs here if they see that it is a community that's taking climate change and being, you know, good environmental stewards in general. And we've done a lot of things, particularly with stormwater and sewers flowing into the Wabash River. And so I think this is another good step. And with West Lafayette doing what they're doing, and I think we're moving in the right direction.
Let's talk about that audit for a second. First of all, how do you get accurate data about what the carbon footprint is, for instance, for an entire city? And especially when you've got a much, as you alluded to, you've got a much more spread out footprint than mm-hmm. West Lafayette has, which is very, very compact. How do you go about generating that sort of data? It would seem like it would have to come from a lot of different sources.
Well, I'm probably going to explain this wrong, so disclosure to your listeners right now, but Iris explained that last night briefly. There is an environmental group that will come into your community and do those audits, and they have data that has been collected from various sources, and I don't recall the name of the group that she indicated last night, but there is a method to get this done, and there is a group of environmental folks that are concerned that, and I don't know if they're sponsored somehow through the government, federal government, or somehow through an agency. Like I said, we're kind of just getting started on this, and that's why we're glad that people were there and that some people there have got some good expertise. But there is a way.
So they got their own set of metrics, basically.
Yeah, and they have the capacity to come into communities and do it. So I was very glad to hear that, because I was kind of along the same lines of your question, wondering, the city obviously doesn't have capacity to do that on its own, but
well, and there are also, you know, people talk about complicating factors such as the fact that in Indiana, we do so much coal burning to generate our electricity so that when you are not on, for instance, solar panels, you are probably hurting the environment by using electricity because you are taking it from a coal burning power plant in all likelihood. And so that is one of those sort of complicating factors. You seem to have to like get to the front end of it to figure out, well, how deep down this rabbit hole do we have to go mm-hmm. to figure out just what the carbon footprint is and figure out, well, how much of, if you're on Duke Energy's system or Vectren's system, what are they doing in their individual utility plans that affects the mm-hmm. city? And so it sounds like you almost have to ask some tough questions of the utilities if you don't happen to own them like you do the wastewater system.
Yeah. I mean, all of those things definitely play a role, and there does have to be a comprehensive look at the system to see what we can do. And like I said, fortunately, it appears that this group, this organization, has done this for, I mean, it sounds to me like cities all over the country. So it sounds to me like they have a good handle on helping us figure out that information. Like I said, I'm really not trying to avoid the question, but this is kind of a new area for us. And there are things that I am going to learn along the way too, but we have started that journey.
So what's the timeline like? You talked about having public meetings to start in January. You've obviously got this audit, which will help you get some data to figure out what it is that you might be able to do. When do you think you have taken enough time to generate and digest that data to where you could start thinking about actually writing this resolution?
Yeah, you know, I told them last night we were not going to hurry through this. We want to get it right, and we want to make sure that we take our time, and so we're not going to put some kind of, you know, timeline on ourselves, and we're certainly not going to rush. But just internally, I would hope that we would have everything done and the ordinance crafted, and the city council would vote on it before the end of 2020.
Okay.
Because I do think the audit, again, from what I heard and what I briefly understand, that in itself could take months.
It seems that way. We talked yesterday when you and I did our interview about the fact that West Lafayette, when it wrote its climate ordinance earlier in 2019, set some pretty ambitious targets, dropping its carbon footprint by 20% in 4 years, dropping it another 20% in the 4 years after that. You were talking pretty honestly in our interview about the fact that this is a tough line to walk. How do you set a goal that would seem to do something good and that would be achievable, but at the same time is perhaps a little bit challenging so that you get some amount of good that comes out of it? Because if you're not trying real hard, then you're not going to get some noticeable change. How do you also then look at, you also talked about the perceptions of people. And, you know, if the targets seem too ambitious, people might go, well, gosh, Mayor, I'm never going to accomplish that. So why bother even trying? How do you message people about their perceptions, their expectations? How do you talk about what's accomplishable, what you think can be done, and here's how we're going to do it?
I mean, I think you take it from a practical, pragmatic approach somewhere along the lines of when we have to discuss with people in the same, and obviously not exactly the same, why do we have to raise sewer rates and why do we have to raise water rates to accomplish these projects and the good that they'll do and that we can do it and we can accomplish it. Here's why. Here's the plan to get there. This is reasonable. It kind of meets that bell curve test of cost to accountability and cost to what you're gaining from it. And I think that we'll approach it kind of in that same vein where, you know, I think if we can get the information out where people will see, well, there's been enough research, there's been enough planning that what they're saying to me as a person makes sense, that is attainable and it's something that's realistic. You know, like you said, you got to try to push so that there's some true measurable good there. And I think that's the best way to do it. Will that convince everybody to begin with? No. But I hope that it's not like I said, not a one and done. So each year we're doing something. Each year you see something about it. Each year there's some maybe goal or there's some we might tweak things just a little bit, but we keep that attention on it. And the young people, I think, that are getting involved will be very helpful in that. And because I think part of it, and you talked about how do you get downstream, and the other part of it is, too, for whether it's recycling or some of these things, that is part of it, right? How do we not create so much waste to begin with that we need to recycle, right? How do we do some of those things that maybe all of us can play a part in that I think there are a lot of people that are anxious to do their part. I mean, you and I both know it's not going to be everybody, but I think there are a lot of people that with the right education and the right explanation, I think there's a lot of people out there that want to do their part.
Well, we're also talking about this big worldwide problem that I think quite a lot of people are worried about, and quite a lot of people look at it and go, well, my gosh, we are on a collision course with some really, really bad stuff in the not too distant future where climate change is concerned. Here you are trying to do what one city can do. Obviously, the city of Lafayette can't come anywhere close to solving the world's climate change issue. You also talked pretty frankly about the fact that, look, there are still some climate change deniers out there. You're potentially going to have to either change some minds or just deal with the fact that there are going to be people who are like, I don't believe this is even a thing, and so I'm not going to worry about it. So how do you get people to understand the impact that your city is hopefully going to try to make in a much larger problem? Because I think even reasonable people are going to say, look, this is a drop in the bucket, but, you know, if we don't put the drop in the bucket, what are you even doing? So how do you get people to see your tiny little bit of value in a much larger scope?
Yeah, I mean, and you put it very well, if you don't get the drop in the bucket never gets full, right? It's going to take a lot of buckets. And so I think we have to show that it is going to take individual communities and then individual states and then countries, but that's all going to have to be done some of that at the local level, right, to make a difference, and that everyday citizens are going to have to be engaged in what and how they live their lives to help make a difference too. And I think, you know, you can show that one community doing what we're doing, let's go back to raw sewage and those things, we have started to notice in a lot of areas where our water quality is improving, right? So did we change the whole river yet? No, but we're changing a part of the river. And if we can get other people to start to change their part of the river, most good things that's ever happened in this country and happened in this world has started that way, right? With a group of people trying to do the right thing, and it's got momentum, and you create a movement. Now, I appreciate all the questions. I don't have any illusions about what our role can be, but we do have a role, and I think I don't want us to get bogged down in, and it will be difficult, as you indicated, we got to bog down in, well, this is such a big problem, why are we even messing with it? We got to get in the mindset, okay, we're going to do our part, and hopefully other people are doing their part in different places too, right? So it's not like this is the only area where people are trying to do things, and that we just help with that grassroots movement that gets the attention of the right people.
Let me ask you two more questions, one kind of backward-looking, one kind of forward-looking as we get close to the end of the year here. First, when you look back at 2019, I wondered what are some of the standout things for you. Would you give me, please, the one thing that first comes to mind as the biggest success that you and or the city have had? And then also on the opposite side of that coin, what's the biggest unsolved challenge that you're going to leave 2019 going, hey, we still got to fix that, and I really got to focus on this? So biggest success, biggest challenge from the last year.
Well, I know you're going to think I fudge if I give two, but I think the biggest success that I've been happy with is our quality of life initiatives, kind of that bucket, right? Getting the baseball stadium started, the zoo exhibits, buying the Lafayette Theater, looking at those quality of life initiatives, things to do with arts and culture and things like that, that make people want to live here, help retain talent, do those things that make people want to stay here. Jointly, kind of as a group, I think the Saab, winning the Saab plant was a big, big win for the whole community this year, where we all pitched in to work on that. I think that'll go down as a really big achievement. What we still have to continue to work on is we have to continue to work on the opioid crisis and mental health issues and access to mental health services. I think that is one of the big things that we need to continue to work on, because some of the other issues where it might be workforce or as it pertains to crime, you know, so many of those things come back to having some kind of cause from either, you know, opioid, drug addiction, alcohol abuse, lack of mental health services. So I think that's still a big issue that we got to keep to the forefront.
And lastly, real quick, as you look forward to the 2020 legislative session for your city, what are some of the things you're paying attention to or you think citizens should be paying attention to?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're looking at, we're still trying to figure out how, with the gas tax being increased in the state, and we got a little bit of bump at first, why is our motor vehicle and road money actually going down now? So I know for many cities and many counties, that's an issue that we really want to try to get figured out. Seems to be a little bit opposite. And I'm going to continue to help push for public education and for our teachers.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. Happy holidays to you and your family.
You too, Stan.
And
thank
we'll
you.
Look forward to doing this again in 2020.
All right, thank you.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.